Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Annie Fry Show is sponsored by Forensic IT, the tech experts that find the root cause of your technical problems. ForensicIT.com.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
I'm not a America's sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I'm Heidi Harrison for Annie Fry. That noise you hear in the background is Mike Tobin, Fox News international correspondent, making noise before he comes on the air. How are you, Mike?
I didn't realize I was on the air. I thought I was still on hold.
Oh, that's fine. That's good. We got you potted up early. Let's talk a little bit about Kim Gardner and this mess in St. Louis. Glad you're here today to talk about that.
Well, I'm glad, too. But unfortunately, the subject matter isn't that good. I think that when you have... Three murderers are getting their cases dropped in the course of a week. And, of course, you still have one, Mr. Campbell, who is out at last report at large. That's not good. Well, and I should say suspected murderers, of course, in these cases. They haven't been to court yet because cases fell apart.
Yeah, you know what? It's one thing when people get off on a technicality. It makes people crazy. And nobody wants anybody who's innocent in prison. We understand that. But when there's prosecutorial misconduct, someone's not doing their job, somebody drops the ball. We've got reports of a woman who was on maternity leave electronically signing documents in felony cases. I mean, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, misconduct doesn't seem to be the most precise word there, because you're talking about people just, attorneys who just didn't show up. Because it seems like it was such a mess, they didn't know that they were supposed to show up. In the case of the one prosecutor who was off on maternity leave, it sounds like she just didn't know. She was on maternity leave. She got assigned to some 10 cases. At that point, her signature started popping up on her electronic signature started popping up on as many as 20 different cases. And so she just didn't know that she was supposed to be there. And she has since resigned, at least according to local reporting out there. So it sounds like she might not necessarily be nefarious by any stretch of the imagination, but she just got caught up in something.
Sounds like it's dysfunction. We're speaking with Mike Tobin, Fox News international correspondent, about the disorder in St. Louis. Apparently, there are some reports that more than 90 prosecutors have quit since Gardner was elected in 2017. Yikes.
It's more than 100% turnover. And
wow.
That's pretty remarkable. No one in the office likes you. and it sounds like they were frustrated. Of course, sometimes people just move on to better jobs. But when you have 100%,
that is
significant. And that it seems to really have contributed to the problem, because you have cases just getting handed from prosecutor to prosecutor. And I don't know what it's like in your line of work, but when you get handed a story and you don't know what it is, well, there's a lot of work to get on top of it.
Right.
And it sounds like in some of the complaints we've had from some of the victims who have been through the course there and through Gardner's office, they had these prosecutors, at least according to their testimony, who weren't familiar with the case.
Mike, you're a Fox News international correspondent. This is Ryan Wiggins, by the way.
Hi, Ryan.
I'm just interested to know, because of the line of work that you're in, you're talking to people in St. Louis, but this is a national or international news story, how bad Kim Gardner is. Is it out there? I mean, is this something that everybody in the nation who's, you know, paying attention knows that St. Louis has a problem with Kim Gardner?
I don't know that. Those of us who are paying close attention were watching it for a while. And I think your conservatives who are particularly concerned about the political motivations of George Soros are paying attention. George Soros gave more than $100,000 to the Political Action Committee that supported Kim Gardner. So people who are watching that are very concerned, and they're kind of in a I told you so moment.
So is this a problem nationwide? You know, you talk about George Soros. He's not just focused on St. Louis. He's focused on getting prosecutors and funding prosecutors across the country. But it seems like he's had particular success here in St. Louis with Kim Gardner. Is this a unique situation?
Well, you know, the two cases I'm looking into are St. Louis and Chicago with Kim Fox. Kim Fox is most famous for letting Jussie Smollett go.
Right.
But the police in Chicago complained that, particularly in gun court, that it's a revolving door. And that's a very interesting dynamic, because the guys on, you know, small drug offenses or whatnot, they don't have any resources. But the gunman for the gangs, as you know, Chicago has a pretty significant problem with gangs. The gunman for the gangs is a valuable member of the gang. And since they're moving drugs, they have money, they have resources. So those guys get resources and they get out. But Joe Shoplifter, he gets stuck. He doesn't get out. He doesn't get out on bail.
Makes no sense. And obviously, when they're not prosecuting what they should do, even the small things, we've got to, obviously, they lead to the bigger things. So speaking with Mike Tobin, Fox News international correspondent, talking about the mess in St. Louis. There was a mother of a man who was beaten to death near a St. Louis train station. It was on Martha McCallum's show, talking about the fact that Kimberly Gardner did a plea deal behind the scenes, didn't even let this mother know about it. The guy could have gotten 20 years and he got only 8. And she's, you know, beside herself. But this is what we're talking about.
Right. And she's one who was complaining that when she showed up, the prosecutor in that case was flipping through his notes. He didn't seem to, according to her testimony, he didn't seem to know the case at all. And he was instructed to take the plea. And so he was just go ahead and doing that. And it sounds like these prosecutors, there's such a revolving door there that they're overworked, a little bit frazzled. And, the cases they're just spread so thin and shuffled around that they don't really have the ability to get inside of these cases and do what's right. And particularly the job of the prosecutor, of course, is to protect the public. You get the bad guys off the street.
Yeah, that's true. We're speaking with Mike Tobin, Fox News international correspondent, about the mess in St. Louis. But it's a national problem. I was talking to a judge in the West, in a western state, not too long ago, who was telling me there are about 40 murder cases in her jurisdiction that have not gotten to trial, because of what the attorneys are doing and this and that. And I mean, these are things that families aren't getting justice. They're waiting years and years and years to get justice. It's crazy.
It's interesting too. And when you talk about justice, what is justice? If God forbid you ever lost a loved one to violence, well, you're not going to be whole because the guy who killed him goes to prison. All you can really do is try to get the violent threats off the street and hope that will, you know, they'll reform in that time and they won't hurt anybody else in terms of making things right. Justice is when your loved one doesn't get shot. And so that's it. And then when you see guys like George Soros funding these, very progressive candidates. And now we see, as I'm looking at the figures with the St. Louis circuit there, I've only got the figures right now up to 2018, and no prosecutions in terms of cases being dropped jumps up by 22.6% after 2017 when Kim Gardner took over. And it looks like I've got them going into 2019 only part of the year, and it's also, it looks like a significant increase at that point. So I'm trying to get the rest of them and figure out exactly what's going on in terms of cases being dropped.
You know, we're speaking with Mike Tobin, Fox News International correspondent, about the mess in St. Louis. So you mentioned George Soros, and we don't know his involvement other than the money that he put into her campaign. You know, some of these people clearly want nothing but chaos, because we see chaos in all of our cities. Everybody knows when you don't prosecute crime. I know you saw that video the other day. Was it Target they were walking out of with armfuls of clothes? Nobody cared. Nobody stopped them. I think it was in California. But this chaos that's being created all over the country, this is when you don't do anything about crime, you're going to have more crime. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, you know, and I can't get inside people's heads. I'm just a reporter. I can't do opinion stuff. So I can't get inside their head and say that they want chaos, that they want crime. But, you know, they say what they want is more equity for black people who come through the system. And clearly the statistics show that you do have a significantly higher black population in the prisons. But what I don't hear people arguing is that there are wrongful convictions. And so that's where it gets complicated. And you can start talking about who's been prosecuted for, you know, petty drugs and who has been prosecuted for violent crimes. And it really it's tough. But I think a lot of these people, when they see her, you got to go by what Kim Gardner said, is that she wanted it to be more fair for black people when she took over the prosecutor's office. Does that mean dismissing more cases and having more violent people on the street?
Well, that's the problem. We're speaking with Mike Tobin, Fox News International correspondent. I've got, Ryan's got more questions for you, but one follow-up on that. Black people are more likely to be victimized by black people, like white people are more likely to be victimized by white people. Generally, in your community, not that everybody doesn't live in different communities. You know what I'm talking about. So who's hurt the most by allowing thugs of any color back on the street? The people in their community, the white people, the black people, the Asian people, whoever. Those people are hurt the most. So stop telling me it's all about, I'm not saying you, the politicians, telling me it's all about equity when the people are hurt the most, or the, you know, the people sitting in the victim's box in the jury, if they ever get there, or the trial, if they ever get there, they're the same race as the people who are on trial.
Well, you know, and that has been throughout history. You know, no one is more horrible to an impoverished community than the people in the impoverished community.
That's right.
I study a lot about Irish history, and the guys who really had it rough were the guys who had the absentee British landlords. Therefore, you had an Irish property manager. So the Irish guys are going to be way worse to the Irish people than the British property managers were. Who killed more Arabs in Saddam? You know, we've seen this repeated again and again. And so you have all of this black on black crime, and it's not a new thing.
Mike Tobin is a Fox News International correspondent. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Tobin Fox, especially if you want to follow what's going on in St. Louis and Chicago crime. So let me ask you a little bit about what we're seeing out of Chicago before we run out of time with you. We keep seeing this idea of a federal police strike force or something. I don't know what we're calling it, but it's a federal police force that's supposed to come into Chicago and supplement the police that are there. What exactly is that? Are there different rules for those police officers? How does this work?
Well, there's going to be different rules for the feds as they come in. I think they say Chicago police, it was Rahm Emanuel who said that they went into a fetal position. And off the record, talking with Chicago cops, one thing they'll tell me is they're not going to proactively police, because you know, one man's proactive policing is another man's profiling. And they're not going to do it. They'll see people even setting up, you know, in terms of petty scams, they'll see two guys setting up a petty scam, and they won't do anything until it's happened. But cops, especially guys who know it, I mean, one of the oldest trick in the book is to see a woman walking with her purse open. Well, one guy bumps into her, and the other guy takes something out of the purse. They'll watch it set up, and they can't do anything until it happens. And as it relates to violent crime, it gets much more complicated than that. So what will a federal strike force do? On the record, what they say they're going to do is really target the weapons. What you heard from Superintendent Brown in Chicago say that they want to do is go after these third parties, the straw purchasers. In fact, some of the Chicago cops said what they want to do is go after the girlfriends, and I'm using his language, the girlfriend of the felon who goes to the gun store and buys the weapon that the felon can't have. And then you have a weapon that ends up out on the street. You know, it's tough. I think particularly when you start talking about gun laws, I spent a lot of time with the gangsters out here in Chicago, and they wouldn't even know how to begin the process of buying a legal weapon. They don't entertain that at all. If you want a gun, you go to a guy. You don't go to the store.
Yeah.
I got a guy.
Before we run out of time here, Mike, is there any chance we're going to see a federal police force here in St. Louis?
Well, St. Louis is not on the list of five cities that is getting that are getting the attention from these new strike forces. So is there a chance? I'm not privy to that kind of information, but St. Louis is not on the list. However, according to this neighborhoodwatch.com that I was just looking at least per capita, St. Louis is more violent than Chicago. Yeah. And that's tough. I think you got a 1 in 51 chance of being a victim, according to this website anyway that I was just looking at.
Yeah, we made the top five again this year. Woo!
Yoo-hoo!
You got to be best at something.
Yeah. Yeah, thank
Badge
you.
Badge of honor. All right, Mike Tobin, thanks for being here. It's a sad situation, but thanks for staying on top of it. This is Mike Tobin from Fox News, Fox News International correspondent. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Tobin Fox. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Yeah, that's it's pretty discouraging, isn't it? When you were talking to him and you were asking him about, you know, some of these other things with crimes, and he mentioned that they're going to go after the girlfriends. Go after the felons. Why are we going after the girlfriends? Not that they're not contributing, but why is it everybody wants to, you know, go around the edges? They don't want to get to the person who needs to be prosecuted. You've got to prosecute these people. If you have an illegal gun, you prosecute them. But so many communities around the country will not prosecute gun crimes. All they want to do is look around and take the guns away from the honest, legitimate citizens who are law-abiding.
As much as I support the police, I am leery of a new federal police force that's under different rules than your local police officer. So I want to stay on top of that and keep asking questions about that.
Absolutely. I think that's super important. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about what you say about the AMC. I want to get to that because I don't know anything about it. You said it's a big deal. You better make it a big deal, Ryan.
Well, then I'll make up a bunch of facts, and you can decide which ones you think are true and which ones aren't.
So it's AMC and what is it?
GameStop. AMC and GameStop. Biggest stock story of the year.
Okay, see how much I know? We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Coming up next on the Annie Fry Show, I'm Heidi Harris.
Yeah. I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on.
Off from my just can't not, you know, snap your fingers. Home. Bob your head. It's one of those happy songs. I'm Heidi Harris in for Annie Fry. How are you doing? Good afternoon. Saw an interesting story the other day, column about why the cops are quitting. Police officers no longer feel they have the public support. That is true. Charles Lehman is here from City Journal and the Manhattan Institute. How are you, sir? Thanks for being here.
Hi, Heidi. Thanks for having me on.
I think it's such an important column because you talked about the fact that they really basically feel as if it's, you know, defunding the police is one thing. We all know that that's an issue and we're not happy about it. And there's been a lot of obviously, a lot of hypocritical, you know, on the one hand, they'll get their security for themselves, but they want to cut the police. We get that. But if you feel as if your boss doesn't have your back, and that's the biggest issue, I think, for what I'm seeing in your column and other things I've seen, that's how police are feeling, that the people above them aren't going to back them no matter what they do.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. That's what comes up in my conversations with officers. You know, we've seen dramatic reductions in police size forces over the past year. The Police Executive Research Forum, which is a policing research think tank, did a survey, almost 200 departments, and they found that on average, recruitment has declined 6%, resignations have gone up 18%, and retirements have gone up 45%. So just like big numbers, big declines in overall policing staff. And the reason why, when I talk to officers, is that they feel like they don't have the support of their bosses, of the civilian leadership in the cities that they police. You know, a lot of people are going, they're leaving big cities and they're going to suburbs because the suburbs are saying, we want officers. And the cities are saying, we think that officers are racists and they're killing black people in the streets, and we don't want them around. And, you know, cops are taking the message to heart.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. We're speaking with Charles Lehman. He's got a column in City Journal, Why Cops Are Quitting. I didn't realize there was a survey of major city chiefs association members reported over 2,000 injuries to cops between May and July alone. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, and you know, cops were on the front lines of many of the protests that we saw last summer, particularly the protests that turned violent. The estimate is something like 7% of protests turned violent. The MCCA estimate said cops used force in, I think, 2 to 3% of all protest encounters. So, you know, it's not like the cops are the guys out there throwing the first punch, but they were the guys who are getting punched, who are getting beaten, who are getting bricks thrown at their heads. It was, I think, just a physically, you know, being a cop is a physically dangerous job, but it was even more physically dangerous than usual. And more importantly, once all the physical danger had passed, they were being blamed for something they did not do.
See, that's the important thing. We're speaking with Charles Lehman, his column in City Journal's Why Cops Are Quitting. That's important, too, because there, how many officers are injured because they don't take the kind of action they might have taken a couple of years ago because they're afraid to take that action first because they're going to get blamed?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to put a number on it, but I'm sure it's greater than zero. There was a cop in Chicago in 2015, I think, who got beaten because she was afraid to pull a firearm because the risk to herself was, in her view, greater if she accidentally shot the wrong person and ended up on the national news. But I really think, you know, it's not even so much cops aren't defending themselves in the situation as cops are just choosing not to get into potentially controversial situations, which means that they aren't stopping people, they aren't engaged in proactive policing. They know the resources to do that, but they also are choosing not to do it. It's just not worth it.
We're talking with Charles Fain Lehman, who is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, looking at your article here called Why Cops Are Quitting from the City Journal. Talk a little bit about the trickle-down effect, in a sense, that happens when you start defunding police and cops start quitting, all the things that that maybe people in those communities don't think about that'll happen as a result of that.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that cops are one of the most efficient crime control tools that we have available. More cops on the beat deters crime. We've shown that time and time and time again in study after study after study. And so when cops have fewer resources, they have fewer officers to put out on the street, and that means more crimes go undetected and unprevented. That's a big problem. It's also the case that when cops have fewer resources, when there are fewer cops, the remaining officers are under greater strain. They have to work more overtime. They have more stress. They're asked to do more, and the effect of that is that they get more stressed and they get more likely to make a bad choice. You know, there's a big difference between the cop who's out there for 8 hours and the cop who has to be out there for 12 hours, although they have the same, you know, they have the same power, they have the same firearm, but maybe they're less good at making decisions, and that's a function of a staffing crunch.
No, that's true. We're speaking with Charles Lehman, column in the City Journal called Why Cops Are Quitting. You were talked to a now-resigned Chicago officer who said there's not a single leader who steps up for the regular cop, the regular street cop. They have power. They have the ability to get up there and say why this was justified, and then they sit there and they can explain it, but they don't want to, or they don't know how, or they don't care. That is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's a political reality that many big city, not all, but many big city leaders think that their constituents are demanding, zero tolerance for cop conduct, essentially, not just misconduct, but conduct per se. That if an officer draws and fires his weapon, he's presumed to have been guilty of murder and he should be treated as such. And I think that's how big city leaders, you know, how they believe they're supposed to be acting, and so that's how they act, and they leave law enforcement out to dry.
That's absolutely true. And we're speaking once again with Charles Lehman from the Manhattan Institute. The column in City Journal is Why Cops Are Quitting. You know, we hear a lot of talk about criminal justice reform, police reform, but especially when it's criminal justice reform, it just irks me every time I hear it because that's all the emphasis being put on the cops. It's not about reforming the criminals. That's who we need to reform.
Yeah, well, right. And you know, I do think one of the officers who said basically it's like the bad guys become the good guys and the good guys
right.
become the bad guys. There's an enormous amount of empathy out there among certain quarters, not among most people, but among certain quarters for people who commit often very serious offenses, harm others. And the view is that, you know, they're just a product of circumstance, whereas cops are the real criminals, the real provocateurs, the people who are really causing harm. I just don't think that, you know, the reality lines up with that.
Yeah, so what do we need to do, Charles Lehman? I mean, what's the answer? To get more police officers who are in charge, you know, sheriffs and those kind of folks, to get them to have some spine? Because they all seem to be hiding under their desks, afraid of political ramifications. I mean, what do you suggest?
Well, I think that's the first step. And, you know, they need to understand that the overwhelming majority of their constituents, they favor reform. They favor smart changes to make policing safer. And I think everybody does. I certainly do. But they don't favor defunding the cops. They don't favor getting rid of departments or taking money away. They're in favor of robust public safety. because that's the streets that they walk down. They want those to be safe. So I think they have to understand that, and they have to stop using cops as a convenient political punching bag. And I think we in this country need to be thinking about how to increase police hiring. You know, there's been a year-on-year decline in the number of sworn officers per capita since the Great Recession. There's a long-run crisis that the past year has only exacerbated. And I think we have to grapple with that fact and say, how can we turn it around? Because as the police force shrinks and ages, that means that there are fewer resources available to us to fight crime, and that's a big problem.
Right, but you know, who wants to be a cop? Step right up. That's the problem.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely. And you see in surveys that, you know, it's not just that people don't want to be cops right now. It's that college kids, when you ask them, do you want to be a cop, they're less likely to say that they want to be a cop. It's becoming a less desirable role. You know, it all comes down to costs and benefits. And if you increase the cost of being a police officer and you reduce the benefits, you're going to get fewer people. And frankly, you're going to get worse people. You get a lower quality of officer. And that's bad right. for police misconduct.
And there's something, by the way, we're speaking with Charles Lehman from the Manhattan Institute, his column in City Journal is Why Cops Are Quitting. Something else that has been discussed a lot around the country is this whole idea of eliminating the liability protections that police officers have. So in other words, something happens, they can be sued civilly, which prior, you know, previously was not allowed. But there are people who want to do that. So if you do something that people don't like, turns out it's not illegal, you haven't broken police department policy, they can still, the family can still sue you civilly. I mean, nobody's ever going to want to be a cop again if that kind of thing passes.
Yeah, you know, I think the devil is in the detail, and you know, it is likely that cities would still absorb ultimately the liability for costs, so cops are going to be paying out of their own pocket, but that's going to affect city hiring, that's going to affect cities' ability to take out insurance themselves. It's going to be disastrous for city pocketbooks. So, you know, I think there are a lot of long-term consequences to dramatically expanding when police can be held civilly liable. It doesn't happen that frequently. You know, I think we tend to overstate the extent to which qualified immunity is used in the courts. But when it does, you know, I still think there are obvious downsides to dramatically curtailing its use.
Charles, is this a problem that you're seeing cops quitting exclusively in cities, or cops across the country, whether it be suburbs, rural areas, quitting at a different rate, same rate across the country? What's the stats?
You know, I haven't seen good measures of that. What I can tell you is that many of the officers who I spoke to, many of those who have resigned, they leave to go to suburban departments. So, for example, in D.C., officers will often leave the MPD or the Baltimore PD and go to Anne Arundel County PD, where there's a lot of demand for police officers. And same thing's happened in Portland or Seattle. So it's certainly the case that if you want to stay in the game, the flow is to the flow is to the suburbs and the cities. The cops that I talked to said, frankly, the money is not as good in the suburbs, but they'll do it because the quality of life is better.
That's right.
It's like a migration of the police.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's crazy. Charles Lehman, Why Cops Are Quitting. Check it out. City Journal. Great column. Thank you very much for staying on this because it is such a big deal and it's happening nationwide. Problems.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, you know, that's the thing, Ryan. I you know, police officers are like any other human beings. Okay, I can do this job here and I can get abused, treated like crap by my boss, treated like crap by the people I'm supposed to be representing and protecting, or I can go somewhere else where they actually appreciate me. Even if it pays less, I don't care because I'm going to be treated better on the job. You can't blame them.
You know, it's funny. I wonder, you remember when you're in high school and you didn't think that your teachers were real people? You know what I mean? You thought, oh, they're not, you know, I'm getting away with stuff in class. They don't know what's going on. But they always knew what was generally going on.
Right.
It feels like the people who want to defund the police and bring in socialism, they feel like they have a teenage mentality. Like they don't understand that all these things are interconnected and that these are real people and there's real consequences to these things.
You know what? I think there are some people who think don't really know, and I think there are a lot of people who do know, who are in on the chaos that this is causing. They see these videos online, you know, they see what's going on with this craziness, and then they find out this person's been paroled or, you know, is out on bail or whatever and is victimizing somebody else. They don't care because they have their private security. We're going to talk about that coming up next hour. The Democrats in various cities, the mayors who are defunding the cops and then turning around and spending a lot of money on their own personal protection, that's kind of a big deal. Such hypocrites. Oh, my gosh. Coming up next, we'll talk about the AMC.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on?
while you see it your way. Run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out.
I'm Heidi Harris in for Annie Fry. Good afternoon. Hope you're having a great one. We've got a lot more to get to here on the show, in the next hour of the show. Including the fact that, believe it or not, Americans are divided on immigration. Oh, my gosh, really? And optimism is at a very low level, the lowest since last summer, regarding COVID and what's going to be happening here in the next 6 months or so. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. All right, now give me the AMC story, Ryan. You mentioned AMC and GameStop, and you were excited about talking about it, so clue me in, bud.
Okay, this is complicated, and I've explained this maybe one time on the show, so if you listen to me go through this before and I'm doing it again, I apologize, but I'm not going to assume that every single person hears every single segment. So here we go.
If you're excited, you'll get me interested in it.
Yeah, to kick back, have a coffee, and listen to the story of a man named Jed. Okay. So it goes like this. So there's always been short sales of stocks, and this is something that's new to me. I'm not, you know, a professional on this, but I've done a lot of studying in the last 6 months just because it fascinates me. So there's been short sales of stocks all the time where people come in, they buy a bunch of it, they try to tank it because they know that the company is weak, and they sort of destroy the stock so that they can make money on it. So the way to sort of picture this in everyday terms is that if Apple comes out with a new iPad and it costs $600 and you go to the store and you're last in line, you missed out, you didn't get the iPad, but your friend who was in front of the line, he got two of them. He spent $1,200. You go to him and you go, hey man, there's a really high demand for these things right now. If I get online right now, I can sell these for $1,000. And then you know they're going to restock them, and within a month, I can go back to the store and buy the iPads back. And so your friend says, well, okay, here, you can loan my two iPads. You go sell them on eBay for $1,000. Give me $100 extra a piece, so I'm making a profit. But then you can keep the rest of the profit. Okay, so you go, you sell those. You make $300 per, and then you go back to the store, and you buy the iPads back at $600 once they're back in stock. You give them back to your friends. You made a profit. That's short selling. That's what short selling is.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It is. Okay. But the way that these two stocks have worked is that in the meantime, while this guy, and usually they're not just buying an iPad, they're buying thousands and thousands of iPads and really trying to manipulate the market for them so that they're actually controlling the price a little bit. So the way that the Reddit people, the average investor, has fought back against these things, basically the first one was GameStop. They really, a bunch of people just said, I don't want GameStop to go out of business. These people are going to short sell it right out of business, and it's one of my favorite companies. Let's try to save GameStop. So they said, everybody, they're trying to short GameStop, so they bought these iPads, basically, and we know that they have to give them back. They have to buy them back soon to pay back their friend. So in the meantime, we're going to buy so many iPads that it's going to drive the price of it way up, knowing that that guy's got to buy a whole bunch of them back at whatever market price we set it at. So it is complicated because it takes thousands, if not millions, of people to jump in and buy those things when they're at that price to drive the price up on the short sellers.
But I remember when the GameStop thing happened, there were a lot of people who were furious about it, but they weren't doing anything illegal?
No, there's absolutely nothing illegal about it. And the politicians got involved because the politicians are all friends with the hedge fund guys. So the hedge fund guys are the ones manipulating these prices where they buy them, they short them, and they drive these guys out of business and they make money on it. And that's fine that they can do that. But it's also fine when the average investor gets involved and beats them at their own game, which is what's been happening with GameStop.
Right.
And it's so far kind of halfway happened with AMC because they were anticipating, well, AMC is the next one. They're going to go out of business. Well, a bunch of people jumped in, bought it, prevented those people from short selling it, and it's gone up in price. Now it's come back down a little bit, so everybody's kind of waiting what's going to happen. We're kind of right in the middle of that one.
Well, I can't imagine it was, you know, putting aside all the short sales and all that. I can't imagine anybody buying. I could see GameStop, people like the games, I get all that. But AMC, movie theaters, when's the last time you saw a movie in a theater?
Well, that's kind of the point of the whole thing, is it actually, in these circumstances, it doesn't really matter how strong the company is because you have a whole bunch of people artificially floating money at the company.
Got it. Yeah,
so that's why it's so weird. But you're right. I mean, I haven't seen – well, actually, We just went and saw Quiet Place 2 last month. That's the first time we'd seen one, though, in probably 4 years.
4 years?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. What about you, Lori? When's the last time you saw a movie in a theater?
Probably just before everything shut down. So it's been at least a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you haven't raced back. They're open. What's the holdup there?
Well, yeah.
I haven't thought about it,
it
honestly.
Does, it, these things right. do have real-world implications, though, yeah. because AMC probably, I mean, it's a nationwide movie theater company.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They probably would have gone out of business if all these people hadn't have jumped in, but now they're doing great. And so all these movie theaters across the country are probably going to stay open long-term because of that.
It also creates business for these companies, too. Once you see the stock starting to go way up,
they have money to spend.
Yeah, people are going to be like, oh, well, I better go see what the fascination is with this company. So it's going to bring them business, too.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe it'll work long term. Maybe it won't. I don't know. I'm just looking at the landscape and trying to figure out nowadays. And I had quit going to movies before COVID. I like movies like anybody else, but I'd gotten tired of it because I got tired of people being rude, talking on their phone. Babies crying, right? All this kind of thing. That's the part I didn't like about it. Plus, if you go and it's a crappy movie, now you sat through 20 minutes of previews. I do because I get there early to get a good seat. So you sit through all the previews, you spend $25 on junk, and then you don't want to walk out if it's a bad movie. So now you've invested all this time. Whereas if you're home and you turn on some Amazon Prime thing and you go, oh, another Bruce Willis movie he just did for the money. Oh, this sucks. You turn it off and you move on with your night.
Yeah, tell me about it. That date that I just talked about that we did last month, you know, we got to pay the babysitter $50. The movie itself costs...
Wait. How much?
Well, we're getting by at $10 an hour for 5 hours. I think that's pretty good these days.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, $10.
$50?
Yeah, $50 for 5 hours. I think that's pretty fair.
Three kids? That's not too bad for
exactly.
three kids.
And,
yeah.
And they're coming to our house. We don't have to go drop them off either. So,
wow.
You know, pretty good deal. But then once you factor in $50 for that, and then, of course, we get one night out every quarter, you know. So we're going to make the most of it. We go out to eat. You're spending, you know, who knows, $60-$70 on dinner if it's a reasonable dinner.
Yeah, you drop 30 at the snack bar. I do.
Yeah, and then 35 on the movie itself.
So you're spending a couple of $100 to go see a movie,
that's
basically.
That's one date night.
Yeah.
So you can see why we don't do it as often as we should.
How about putting the kids to bed and a little clicking on some Amazon Prime? That's what I'm saying, my friend.
Well, they're four years old. I don't know if we can just, here, watch a movie. We're going to leave.
No, I mean, you put them to bed.
Yeah.
No, you put them to bed and you watch it. You watch the movie at home.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were suggesting that we just put a movie on and then we sneak out.
No. I'm not saying that. But, I mean, you know, you stay, that's a lot of money to pay for something that may or may not be any good. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but, you know, like, it's important to have a date with your spouse sometimes. You got to do it. Because we don't get, I mean, we get time together, but it's always with kids running and jumping and sword fighting and whatever.
Oh, no.
So,
sword fighting?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got two boys. So
oh, okay.
Everything's
boys
a sword.
Boys are always sword fighting. That is so great. I love that. Well, okay, now you've explained it to me. I understand now, but it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know. I wouldn't invest in a movie theater because I don't, I'm just looking at what I do and not just about my life, but just how the landscape's changed. I mean, it used to be that people didn't have the video games for the kids or the movies for the kids. You had to go to a theater to see a Disney movie when I was a kid. You know, you had to wait till Saturday morning for the cartoons. That's all changed. You had to wait all year for the Grinch. That's all changed. The kids can watch all that stuff all the time. So you go, I'll wait till Frozen's on DVD. We're good.
There's something that I miss about the cultural common experience of watching a Charlie Brown's Christmas with everybody else in the country at the same time, because I know we can all watch it. We can all watch it. That's fine. It's there. But something about the communal experience of
when
knowing
it's right. on TV,
everybody was watching it.
Yes, and you wait for it.
Yes.
Well, there were things like, back, you may remember this, Lori. I don't know how old you are, but Roots, when Roots came out back in the day.
That was the late 70s, right?
Right. I mean, everybody stopped what they were doing to watch Roots, the miniseries. Everybody. That was an amazing thing to see at that time. Nobody could watch it on DVD. You couldn't watch it later. You had to watch it right then and there.
I was not alive yet, so I do
you,
not. No,
but you lost me on that one, too.
But these were cultural things that people all stopped to watch.
The
that
Great
we shared.
Pumpkin.
Yeah. Yeah. Any of, any of the specials. Yeah. I love those things.
Yeah.
They're still there.
I still wait for them.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, I know, but you can now, unfortunately, now you can see them anytime, which is always a problem.
And I won't. I really won't. My mom offered for years and years, let me buy you the DVD of those, and I refused them. I said, no, I will wait for them to come on TV, and I will sit and I will watch them then, and I will watch them that one time, and that's it. I will not do it outside of when they're on.
Lori's a purist.
I am a purist. Yes.
Don't mess with her.
No.
All right. Listen to this, guys. Coming up next hour, recent data from Israel's health ministry suggests Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine is far less effective in preventing infection and symptomatic illness with the Delta variant. They're saying it's 39% effective. Now, remember when this whole thing started? We'll talk more about this next hour. Remember when the vaccine started? We were told they were what? 60, 70, 80% effective on stopping you from getting this. They never said you wouldn't get anything. They just said that it would stop you from getting the most severe symptoms. Remember that if you read through the fine print, that's what it said. 39% effective against Delta. And the question, of course, becomes, what about Epsilon? We're going to go down the whole Greek alphabet?
Yeah, we're going to start naming them like hurricanes.
Well, I mean, it's... People have got to, if you got a vaccination and you don't know what's in it, you've been lied to. They told you it was going to be this. Now it's that. No wonder people don't trust the government. So we'll talk about that next hour. Yeah, that's kind of a mess. And Americans, believe it or not, interestingly, are divided when it comes to immigration. And an old Obama doctor, former White House doctor, predicts that Biden will either resign or face the 25th Amendment. That's interesting. Because that leaves us with Kamala, which is pretty frightening. We'll get some of the stories we'll get to next hour right here on the Annie Fry Show. Ryan, tell them where they can find the podcast if they missed any of the show today.
971talk.com. That's where you can also find the Odyssey app if you want to download it and stream the station at any time, which is very convenient to do. You can also rewind there, which I love because inevitably Heidi will say something that you're going to go, wait, what did she just say? And then you can rewind. And you can listen to see what exactly it was and whether you should be mad or you should be happy.
You can rewind to hear my brilliance. Is that what you're
saying? That's exactly what I'm saying.
Got it. Okay. Well, it's good to know that it's there. And by the way, of course, everybody's watching on YouTube. I hope the Annie Fry Show on YouTube, you can actually watch us do our thing.
Yeah. On the Facebook stream or the YouTube stream at any given time, Annie Fry Show streaming on live on both platforms.
And you can comment. People make all kinds of fun comments, which I will read during the break. All right. I'm Heidi Harris, in for Annie Fry. Coming right back. Much more to come on the final hour of the Annie Fry Show.
Life is very short, and there's no time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.